I'm Patricia Pierce. Welcome to the Evolutionary Activist Podcast. We are living at an important moment in our history, a time that is calling us into a new way of being, a new consciousness from which a sustainable, just, and peaceful future can arise. In this podcast, we explore ways to help that future take hold within ourselves so that together we can help it come forth in our world. Our guest today is Marie Miyashiro, who is an internationally recognized expert in empathy in the workplace. And Marie has presented keynote talks and trainings in Europe, in Asia, in the Middle East, and in the US. And she's also the author of the book, The Empathy Factor. And she has been presenting for many, many years in organizations, governmental agencies, nonprofits, corporations, about how the workplace can become more empathetic. And so thank you so much, Marie, for being with us today.
It's great to be here, and I love your topic.
So I'd like us to start. I'm very curious, when you are speaking with a group, how do you define empathy?
That's a great question. You can look up in the dictionary and find one definition, Patricia. But I've shortened it to something that's very specific to the way we teach it. And the way we like to say it now, we've reduced it to just a few words. We define empathy, my team and I, and the practice I belong to, which is the nonviolent communication practice, as creating emotional connection through human needs. And we have a very specific definition about what human needs are that we can get into, but that's the very succinct and I think pretty accurate and powerful definition of empathy, creating emotional connection. So there's that emotion component that makes us all human and alive, and the human needs component, which is very much the innermost deep items and things that matter to us as human beings. This is how we define human needs. And they're usually one word, like trust, respect, love, acceptance, belonging, collaboration, interdependence, growth, mastery. So that's how we define it. And it seems to be working great.
So just to make sure that I understand, so empathy is, we all share these needs, right? These are universal human needs that you're talking about. Is that
yes,
right?
Correct.
So because we all share these needs, we can empathize with one another because we know what those needs are like. Is that the basis of what you're talking about?
Exactly, because the standard definition of empathy is that we can understand something inside of us, inside of someone else, because we recognize it in ourselves. So there's that emotional resonance with someone else because we're resonating with it within ourselves. So that's one standard definition of it. And this goes, I think, a level deeper, which is really about human needs, that underneath every feeling, there's a human need that's being met or unmet. So when we have pleasant experiences, our needs in that moment that are active are being met. And when we have unpleasant feelings, those needs are not being met. And so it's a way for us to help understand that our feelings do not come from other people or the conditions around us. They really come from the needs inside of us. And it sounds simple, but when you think about it, Patricia, that's a revolutionary thought.
Can you tell me, when you talk about empathy in group settings or even with individuals, are there any common misconceptions that you come across that people have about empathy?
Yes, there are many, and we love working from what we call key distinctions. So key distinctions are very important with empathy because empathy is not something you do, it's something you are. And it shows up as behaviors that we can see in the visible world and concretely. But there's a key distinction between doing empathy and being empathy. So it's really a receptive state of being mindfully curious. That's another way of of talking about empathy, being mindfully curious, intentionally curious about what is going on with this other person. And in our model, we also talk about self-empathy. So what is going on with me right now? So for example, I'm in the throes of something that was very upsetting for me. And it was one of these, the last couple days, it has to do with, you know, what's going to happen to my mom's estate in the future. She's alive and well right now. But, you know, we had a meeting with the attorney, and then my sister and I have to talk about things, and my mother was uncomfortable. And I just felt like crawling out of my skin, honestly. And, you know, because it involves money and the future and who's giving what and who's going to get what. And I was like, oh, my gosh, you know, why do we have to talk about it? But right. But it is what it is. But because I have this empathy practice, and it took me a full day of just kind of sitting in the discomfort, you know, I realized what was getting triggered for me was shame. And when I connected with that feeling, I started to feel more empowered and liberated. And the need that I was able to identify, because I have this list, right, of feelings and human needs that we all carry around as facilitators of this process and also as students of this process, I was able to identify respect as the need. And so I was then able to say, okay, how do I want to show up as a person that people respect? How do I want to be the daughter that my older sister respects? You know, how do I want to not be the young daughter, you know, in terms of in the eyes of my mother? Because for those of us who were born last, we are forever sometimes branded as the youngster, you know, no matter how old you are. It's astonishing to me. So that's just a small example of how powerful this process is and how it can be done in just seconds. Because even though I was sort of I felt like I was spinning in it for a day or so, that's a necessary process sometimes, to be able to sit in it and then feel everything and then pull myself out of it. So I'm really glad that I pulled out of it in time for this interview, because if we did the interview yesterday, I don't know how productive I would have been, because I was really feeling a lot of the angst that comes with shame, you know, my questioning my self-worth and kind of these useless why questions instead of very productive, what can I do, and being curious about what was happening to me and being curious about the other people in my life, the attorney, my mother, my sister, you know. And it's a small example of how powerful this can be. And with that clarity that respect is the need that's active for me right now, I'm making very different choices in how I did, chose to do self-care this morning, chose to take care of some other pieces, and how I'm organizing my time today and in the next few days. And I'm not in angst anymore, I'm happy to report. I feel I feel powerful, and I have more clarity about choices I can make going forward and how choices I made in the past might not have served me.
And what you're describing requires a certain level of self-awareness, that capacity to notice, to stop and notice that there is some feeling of discomfort, and then to go in and identify what it is, and then identify what is the corresponding need.
Exactly.
So that's the self-empathy, and that would be something then that you would take into some situation with another person, where you would sense that there is some, if they don't have that level of self-awareness, then do you kind of detect that there's something, they seem a little unsettled about something, and then investigate that with them, or how do you do that?
Yeah, that's a great question. So two things about that. One is the reason why in our process, and it's the reason why our process has gone viral in a global 300 company that we're working with. To date, we've trained over 15,000 people, either me directly or the trainers I've trained. And we believe it's the largest empathy corporate program in the world right now. And by the end of this year, we'll have trained 25,000 people. And the reason it's so popular and going viral is because a key component of the way we teach it, Patricia, is that empathy begins inside of you first. That it's much easier to be mindfully curious about someone else and to be generous in listening and in spirit with someone else when you have your resources met inside of you. You know, I'm very unresourceful at times when my needs are being unmet or when I'm in discomfort or when I'm in pain, either emotionally or physically. And that's a normal human response. So that's number one. Having said that, there are times like this morning where I realized I was so focused on like, what are my needs and what's going on with me and why are they treating me this way and what's going on here? I just realized, oh my gosh, I'm spinning in this whole level of being self-absorbed. And I was like, I'm sick of it. So I said, let's just focus on making mom happy today. Let's just focus on giving to tonight. I'm leading a residential immersion program in Europe coming up for 16 people. And we do webcasts in advance. So one of them is tonight at 10 p.m. my time because I'm in Honolulu. And I just printed a picture of them and I look at them and I think, I want to be my best for them. So I stopped focusing on me and I started focusing on others. And so those are two pathways in answering the question you asked about how to connect with others. One is to notice, wow, I'm really totally uninterested in listening to this person because I'm completely absorbed in my own pain. So even to notice that is authenticity and honest, which is great. And we can talk about some key distinctions with empathy in a moment. And the other way is to just realize, oh, I don't want to focus on myself right now. I really want to give to others because the need to contribute to others is one of the largest needs that any human being has. We're born as socially interdependent organisms. And so everything in our neural pathways and in our physical being is intended to create connection with others. So sometimes we just have to intentionally choose, like I did this morning, I'm going to focus on giving to others. And by doing that, I felt better about myself. And when I came back to my situation that's going on within my family, it really looked different because I was in a different place having done something that I felt happy and proud about for others. So I don't know if I'm answering your question, am I?
To be honest, I don't even remember because I'm so enthralled with what you're saying, which is that I'm really taken by what you've just said, that one of our primary needs is to be of service, to care for others.
Yes, absolutely.
And I think that's not... If you asked somebody on the street, you know, what is the primary human need, that may not be the thing that comes to people's minds first. You know, they might think of other things, but to hear you say that is so, for me, it's so exciting because when we can actually honor that in ourselves, that can totally transform the world. It can totally transform how we see ourselves and how we see ourselves in relationship to others.
Yes, and in fact, I love what you just said, and I actually think it's the only way the world will be transformed, one relationship at a time. I had these friends a long time ago. One was an emergency room physician, and a wise person. You know, they were older than me. Back when I was in my 30s, I would hang out with them, and I asked them, they were doing this nonprofit project. They just thought of something, something about whistles, handing out whistles to women so that they had something to blow at night if they were alone at night walking to the bus stop. You know, these were women who don't have access, easy access to transportation. So they started this whole nonprofit movement in Hawaii. It was really beautiful. And I said, why do you do that? And And she told me, the doctor told me, because that's the only way she believed the world would be better, is one person helping one other person. And I thought it made so much sense.
That's really beautiful. So I recall that in your book, The Empathy Factor, you refer to something that I believe one of your mentors said. Someone who, as I recall, had worked in conflict-ridden areas all around the world, some of the most troubled places that we can imagine. And he said that U.S. businesses were some of the most violent settings.
Yes. And so this is my mentor and teacher, and I've also co-authored a chapter in the Change Handbook with him. And we're working on the fourth edition right now, which by Barrett Kohler, which will be out later this year. So it's a summary of all the things we're talking about in written format, and of course more, you know, case studies and some data and some additional information. And that person is Dr. Marshall Rosenberg. He was a practicing psychologist who studied with Carl Rogers, and he passed away in 2015. And he is the developer of nonviolent communication, and he said that to me. And I heard him say it in some of the workshops he gave as well, that he's worked in some of the most violent places, including Rwanda and Nigeria and the Middle East during some of the most tense Palestinian and Israeli confrontations. And he said the most violent place was businesses. And we talked about it. And I have to say, I agree with him in the sense that some of the most violent ways that we affront each other is through shame, humiliation, anger, fear. And these things are very common and sometimes subtle, sometimes overt, but they're very common in the business place. In fact, anger is sometimes accepted because it shows someone cares or is passionate, or we learn to accept and tolerate someone who speaks or treats someone in these ways. And they're usually seen as power over moves. So one of the key distinctions we talk about for nonviolent communication in business is the difference between power over people and power with people. That came from Marshall Rosenberg. And I adapted that for the business sector in one way. And I like to say profit with people, not profit from people, because there's nothing wrong with profit. Mm-hmm. You know, profit, the Bible talks about profit, you know, but it doesn't talk about profit just in a financial sense, right? So whoever gains the world and loses his soul, I think it is, profit, you can profit in your soul as well. So you being a pastor, you probably remember it more accurately than I. Having been a pastor, you remember it more accurately. So these are things. If I had to name five things we want to watch for in the workplace, they are shame, fear, guilt. I have a list that I often show. Let me just pull it up here because I want to make sure I'm remembering it correctly. So it's fear, guilt, shame, anger, and rushing. So Princeton did a study called the Good Samaritan Study years ago in the 70s that showed that the biggest variable, Patricia, in whether people chose to be kind and helpful to someone they saw in distress or not was whether they were in a hurry.
Oh, that is so interesting.
Yeah, and that was the biggest variable. And so when we overschedule our days, when we're multitasking and our brain is in highly active modes, we're going to have the tendency to not be as caring as we naturally are.
That is so interesting. We marginalize it just because we schedule it out of our days.
Exactly. And you know, we're feeling fear because we've got to be somewhere, right? We have an obligation, or we're late for our job or something, you know, where we fear the consequences of not being at wherever we want to be. And that keeps us from really seeing, actually seeing suffering right in front of us. And this was the study they did at Princeton where someone was moaning and hunched over on the side on the sidewalk where these quote-unquote good Samaritans were passing, and the only difference on whether they stopped or not was how much of a rush they felt they were in, how late they were.
That is so interesting. And I think about the current economic environment, and also the trend to downsizing and trying to get more and more work out of fewer and fewer people, which heightens this sense of always feeling behind and not having time, and not having time even to interact in a mindful or compassionate way with your colleagues with whom you are interdependent, right?
Exactly. And that's, I'm glad you brought that up, because that's one of the surprising things about this project that I'm working on. We're into it 3.5 years now. It started as a retail education program, and it very quickly went viral as a cultural change project that has reached and included the endorsement of all the way to the C-suite at the very top of this multinational European-based company with 85,000 employees. And they're a retail group, so they've also got an additional 1 million people who represent their products, you know, internationally through different retailers. So this idea of being connected to your team members is one that's gotten even more attention, because, you know, people lose sleep. And people join companies and brands, right? But they quit their boss. That's what the research shows. Mm-hmm. And this is even more so, and I think this is why our program has gotten so viral and popular, is because this is especially true for the Generation Z and even part of the millennials, right? The Generation Y. That are really coming into the workforce. And in the next few years, by 2020, I think it is, the majority of people will be Generation Y and Z. So these cohorts in particular want to be treated with respect. And you said something earlier too. Meaning is very important to them. So maybe if you ask the average guy on the street, what are your top needs? They might not say contribution, but it might be camouflaged or connected to the need for meaning, because you know people want meaning in their lives. In fact, you know the rate of a death for people who retire is statistically higher than people of that same age and health group that stay employed.
Oh, because they feel they've lost the meaning in their lives.
Exactly. Uh-huh. And this is probably more true for men who might have been very career focused, whereas women might have had a balance between career and families, you know, in the past. It's changing now, but that's certainly true in the past. So yeah, fear, anger, guilt, shame, and rushing, the five enemies of human connection.
Which are so prevalent in workplaces.
Yes.
So what are some of the hurdles you encounter to presenting this work in a workplace, where there might be this idea that this is not going to be good for business?
Right. Yeah. So I think we can look at it on a micro and a macro level. On the micro level, when managers hear this, they have a curiosity, and they can be somewhat skeptical, you know, which is a good thing, because I think people, I love it when people come with their honesty about this. So one of the things they say is, you know, well, what am I going to do with an employee who's not performing? And do I just like keep them? And, you know, I just, you know, I'm nice to them. And one of the things I like to say is that some of the key distinctions we make is that empathy is not about being nice. It's about being real. Mm. So that is one of the most powerful things we can learn about empathy that we don't normally think about. So in other words, if you're a manager, for example, there are times when you're not going to make a request. So that's another key distinction, a request versus a demand. Okay. So a demand is something we ask of someone and we really don't have space to hear no, or there'll be some kind of consequence if we hear no. It's not really a request. We may ask it in the form of a request, but when they say no, we might roll our eyes or have judgments about them or fire them,
right?
You know, at the extreme. So it's better to couple this idea of authenticity to say, hey, right now, I'm going to ask you to do something, and it's super important to me because, and you state the need, you know, because progress has got to be made, you know, for me right now. And honestly, I like cannot handle a no. You know, it's just better to say that. And that is empathy, because it's still creating a human connection through, it's an emotional connection through human needs.
Right, because the other person can understand, oh, this person has a need. I know what that's like. So
exactly.
They're connecting at that level.
Exactly. And they may still say no, but at least now this person has been honest and they've telegraphed, my God, I'm going to have a reaction that you might not like if you say no. At least that part is honest and upfront. And when managers hear that, they love it. EVP, you know, high level, she told me she felt liberated hearing that because she has that in her world. And instead of, you know, sugarcoating it and trying to make it a super nice request when it's really a demand, she felt liberated to just be able to make it a demand. Now, the way it stays empathetic is that when you make a demand, you state it, but then we come back and we really keep our mindful curiosity about what it's like for that other person. So we say, okay, I just told you what's up for me, and I want to know what it's like for you to hear for you to hear this request or what I just said. And not to just ask that, but to really be listening open-heartedly and with generosity to how this person is responding to it. And if you have an honest relationship, and sometimes with people with structural power, you have to ask several different ways because people aren't, depending on what culture you work in, there are many cultures where people are honest, but in some cultures they're not. So you really want to put an emphasis on over-exploring the honesty that this person might feel and looking also for verbal and nonverbal cues as well. So the idea here is that we retain our roles. You know, I have a role in an organization, you have a role in an organization, and that's sort of our street addresses in that organization, how we organize our work, which is fine. Mm-hmm. But we're also both human beings, and there is no hierarchy there. So it's holding both. And this is the complexity, Patricia, of modern international business. This is one of the additional complexities in addition to being globalized, diversified, and very, very quickly evolving and dynamic as the business world and most markets are these days and industries, is that we're holding the complexity of being having our roles, which might have very large power differentials, and also holding our equality that we're both human.
Right. So this podcast is called The Evolutionary Activists, and it's about being the change that can help bring forth a sustainable, just, and peaceful future, and helping that future really land in us so that we can invite it forth. So I'm curious, when you think of that, what role do you see empathy playing in bringing forth that kind of a future?
Yes. Oh, I love that question. And I love thinking about sustainable, peaceful, and just. Were those the three?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Qualities? Yeah. So in terms of sustainable, the reason why this empathy in the way that we're teaching it has gone viral and is becoming a sustained movement in the countries that they are now being deployed in the countries of this particular multinational that is being deployed in, is because the emphasis is personal development. So people are always asking, in fact, we had one employee in Hong Kong who after the training, she was crying. And, you know, in China and Hong Kong and Asia, unless you're in Thailand, crying is not necessarily, showing emotion is not necessarily commonplace. And we said, wow, what's wrong? What happened? And she said, oh, no, I'm just so happy because 20 years I've been working for this company and this is the first training I went to where there's something for me. You know, because we were teaching her how to breathe to return to common focus, how to use a gratitude practice to get a center of herself when she was feeling tired or not very motivated, and how to identify her own qualities and strengths first before she went to connect with a customer. And the equivalent of this, of course, is a team member or a manager or a leader and how they connect to their team or other leaders within an organization. So that's what makes, I think, this program so attractive and sustainable is we answer the question, what's in it for me, very early, and we actually start with that. So it's how to have a stronger I, you know, your own intrapersonal relationship and conversations with yourself and notice what you're telling yourself. So that makes it sustainable. So that was the sustainable piece. And peaceful is with others, you know, how to have peace with others. And when you have a stronger I, you have more to give to others. That's my experience in watching other people and my experience living this myself. And so peace begins with us, right? So when we have peace within ourselves, we can treat other people more peacefully. And what I realized, you know, I was just saying this in a training the other day, Patricia, that I have a different view of people who treat me in ways that I don't enjoy or that I really dislike. And one of the things I've come to realize is that they're treating me that way because they treat themselves that way.
Right.
You know, and when I start with that, after I collect myself, because sometimes these things can be harsh, and trigger things within us. But when I practice starting with that, it just looks more peaceful and I'm able to come more open-heartedly. So I don't know if how you define peaceful but I think it has a quality of open-heartedness in it, you know, being generous. So I think that openness really is how we create the peace at the you level among ourselves, between us. And then I think justice comes from having a strong I that creates a strong you. And then the I and you disappear, Patricia, and we just become a we.
Beautiful.
You know? Yeah. And I've heard different people who teach nonviolent communication or refer to it as empathy being not something that happens that when there's two people, for example, that empathy is the space between us. So it's like this third living energy in the relationship. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I really like what you're saying in terms of the strength of the I, of the self, that empathy is not relinquishing your own needs. So as to, you know, meet the other or to support the other, but it's coming into an equal partnership. And I've also heard you talk about how the importance of inner strength when it comes to empathy, and that's not something people typically understand about empathy, that it requires this inner strength.
It is, and I am a firm believer in it. Like I said, there are times when you want to stop being self-absorbed and focus on just giving to others. But in general, I would say that a life where you are aware of your own needs and exercising self-care and generosity with yourself first, and a deep listening to yourself first, you know, so that you can make choices that meet your human needs. That this is the basis, I think, of all the things you mentioned, peace and justice. And I want to say one more thing about social justice, nonviolent communication, which is the process upon which the model that I've developed for businesses is based upon, is really a social justice movement. And I was just thinking the other day, so it's used in countries in social justice settings, legal settings. One of the people who's a friend of mine in Nigeria is teaching this to tribes of young men who are killing themselves, right? Mm-hmm. So for her, it's not a, it's human connection that's a matter of life and death. And even the wording nonviolent communication was chosen by Dr. Rosenberg to echo the movements of Gandhi and Martin Luther King Jr. Mm-hmm. So social justice, I wanted to say this about the workplace. I think the other reason why this project has gone viral, and it just occurred to me literally within the last few days, is that I think the people who are learning this see themselves as social activists within their own organizational culture, Patricia. Yeah, that they want a kinder, more just, more humane workplace themselves. And they see this as a way to bring it about because the research is there, right? So companies that train empathy, we have the research now, companies that train empathy report 50% more net income per employee than companies that do not train empathy.
Oh, that is so, so it is good for business after all.
It's very good for business. So it's good for everyone. That's what I love about this is it's, and that's why at the CEO suite, there's complete, not only endorsement, but sponsorship, funding. And I had the great pleasure of being in Europe last summer and actually training a group of the global executive committee for this company. And we did all the things that their retail sales associates do, and they loved it. Because even though, you know, it has an element of play in it, right? So it's science. Everything we do is science-based, but it's also based on play. And why is play important? Play is important because people do their best learning when they're having fun. You know, and so we do a lot of things where we're moving with our bodies and yet it's completely professional and appropriate for, you know, these top executives in the world, really. So I wanted to say that's a new insight for me. And this is creating an internal social justice movement within the organizations I've worked in, whether it's this company or whether it's the universities I've worked with or government agencies. And I'm really pleased and proud of them. And I'm really pleased that that's happening.
Mm-hmm. And so you're saying that you employ both the science behind all of this, and there's this element of play. And also hearing you talk about what this entails, I would also, from where I sit, highlight the spiritual aspect of it, although you may not present it that way. You may not name it that or label it that in those settings. But what you're talking about, I would say, is completely spiritually based. And the mindfulness and the breathing and the recognition of our common humanity, and that the I and the you finally becomes a we, all of this is spiritual content as well as the, you know, the more corporate sort of, you know, science play thing. But I just wanted to highlight that because as a spiritual explorer myself, what you're describing is, it's like spirituality with legs, like with you put the landing gear You've put the landing gear on the idea so that you can bring it into these settings where it can totally transform an environment, a corporate environment.
Yes, and that's what I've always been interested in. And I love that you're saying that. And let me ask you this. How do you, just so you know, I can have clarity as we continue here, how do you define spirituality?
I think of spirituality as living out of this understanding that there is one life.
That would be
my basic definition.
Wow.
And that the spiritual life is one in which we are growing more and more into that awareness and bringing that more and more into our lives.
Yeah, I love that. You know, I think sometimes I've had people call me a sneaky spiritualist, you know, because my prime focus is workplaces, you know, business and organizations. And so, you know, I think this is a sneaky way of doing it. But you know what I love about the for-profit sector? And I think a lot of times there's enemy images of for-profit companies, and sometimes for good reason. But at the end of the day, there is no company. There's only people. You know, they're all human beings within these companies. But the great thing about for-profit entities is that once you show them that something can make a profit, they will do it. Like, they will empathize. They will become empathetic.
They'll connect with it.
Right. And they're not just doing it. They understand they have to be it. So one of the things we share early on, even before I was hired by this firm, I said, look, I don't know if you're going to hire us or someone else, but let me just tell you this, that the greatest danger with empathy in the workplace is that it will be used as a technique for ends other than human connection, like profit. So I make it very clear in the trainings we do, and initially when we were hired, that let's look at the data. Companies that train empathy are more profitable. Companies that include empathy in the way the organization operates have more employee engagement, less turnover, which is a big deal right now because the upcoming generations aren't going to be as loyal as the boomers were. You know, it's a whole different mindset. They'd rather go off and be entrepreneurs, you know. So I think it's really important to understand that empathy is not something you do, it's something you are. The moment you do it to make money, it's no longer empathy, it's manipulation. So these are some very important key distinctions. And because empathy is an energy, people can feel this, right? Like, have you ever been someplace where someone is saying all the right things and doing all the proper gestures, but you don't feel like they're being real, right?
Right. Yes. Yeah. You can pick up that they're doing it for some other reason, some other motive.
Right. Yeah. Then the motive could be, oh, a checklist, like I'm supposed to do this.
Right.
Or
right.
It could be, I want you to buy something, right? Or I want you to think of me in a certain way. So, right. Yeah. So I think that's really, really another key distinction that's important is you do it only for the sake of connecting with this beautiful human being standing in front of you.
That's tremendous. Well, Marie, this has been great. And I would like to ask one more question before we wrap this up. And that is, a lot of us who are listening to this podcast aren't in corporate settings. They may be, you know, they may, whatever. They're from all different walks of life and in all different settings. But what is one way that each of us can begin to bring empathy into our daily lives more, regardless of where we might work or what we might do in our daily lives? What would be one thing?
Yes, one thing. Let me pick my favorite one thing. There are many.
Well, you can have more than one thing.
Okay. Well, I think one of the most important things, especially at home and in our community settings, is to slow down and calm down our nervous system. Like, it's really to understand that the entirety of the world we perceive is only as real as the filter of our nervous system. That's it. So we tend to think that what we're seeing or hearing is the reality, but that's not true. Science has proven it's not true. What's true is that what I'm perceiving is being perceived in whatever way that is because of the state of my nervous system. Mm-hmm. And that is a powerful reminder for us to notice, make time for our nervous system. And one way to do this is just to take two, you don't have to be a meditator. If you're a meditator and you do yoga, great. But it's really this sort of periodic, intermittent steps throughout the day. So I like to do 2 to 3 to 5 minutes, depending on what you can tolerate, of closing my eyes and just taking a few deep breaths and noticing how my breath moves through my body 3 to 5 times a day. Now, the reason why it's so simple but powerful is that 75% of all the stimulation that goes into our brain comes through our eyes. So if we can just close our eyes for even 2 to 3 minutes, and sometimes, you know, you see sometimes in movies or in real life, someone gets really terrible news and the first thing they do is they close their eyes because their nervous system at that moment is overwhelmed, and closing our eyes allows us to reset and become grounded again. So just closing our eyes for 2 minutes is an amazing gift, and being still. Separate from that, you can stretch the body. So feelings are not things we think. Feelings are actually somatic experiences in our bodies. So that's another key distinction, is that they're things you actually feel. So when we feel fear or anger or shame, where do we feel it in our body? In our stomach, in our neck, in our right eyeball, you know, wherever it might be. And being curious about that immediately brings us to presence. So we talked about 2 of the 3 immediate ways we can get present. One is with the breath and closing the eyes. 2 is noticing our somatic feelings in the body. And the 3rd is noticing our thoughts. You know, it's not pleasant sometimes because we have, we're humans and we have judgmental thoughts. Like, I could tell you some things I was thinking about my sister, who I love and adore, the last couple of days. Yeah. But I notice them. I notice them. And then I can ask myself, is this true? And the answer is no, it's not true.
Yeah. Once you notice it, then you can work with it.
That's where the power. So it's those 3 things, the breath, the body with feelings, and then the mind with noticing thoughts.
That's really helpful. Thank you so much for being with us. And people can check out your work on your website, empathyfactor.com. And your book also is available for sale, The Empathy Factor. So Marie, thank you so much for being with us. And more than that, thank you for the work that you're doing in the world. It is so, so valuable. So thank you.
Thank you. And you're welcome. And I'm honored to be here. Thank you, Patricia.